You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! Wrestling is awesome! If my chair is thrown on the roof, rallying up the ladder, stop the damn fans! 1, 2, 3! ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable! ESO! Oh, hell yeah!
Hi, folks. It's time again for the ESO Pro, the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. Tonight, I am joined, as always, by Mission Control, Richard Rico Suave Yule. And we're also joined by our roving reporter and bon vivant, Jonathan Jojo Williams from WrestlingAndPopCulture.com, WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. And tonight, he's bringing us an interview with indie wrestler Congo. But our main thrust is the new era. The new WWE Raw, the new SmackDown Live, the events from Battleground that just completed last week, and, of course, the draft from last week. So there's lots to talk about in WWE land, and that's what we're going to do. So sit back, strap in, and give a listen.
Lighter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
We are going to talk with Mr. Jonathan Williams, and he's going to talk about the big anniversary show that he was a part of there recently, there in his home state of Big ATL. So, Jojo, tell us all about it, man.
Well, it was the 5th anniversary of WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, which I started right around the time that WrestleMania was coming to Atlanta. And that was kind of just coincidence, but basically I wanted to start a blog. I was a freelance journalist writing for a bunch of local newspapers and magazines and national ones for that matter. And wrestling was always a thing that I had a hard time selling people on as far as covering, you know, even when WWE was coming to town, you know, newspapers and magazines just kind of don't know what to do with wrestling a lot of times, or they just don't have anybody editorial wise that follows it or is into it. I did write a little bit, and of course with WrestleMania coming to Atlanta, I got to write about a little more wrestling stuff, cause that's a bigger event than just Raw or SmackDown coming to Phillips Arena or something like that. I was at a point in my journalism career where, print journalism was kind of fading away, and a lot of the publications I was writing for didn't know how to handle that. So the way they handled it for the time was to just downsize and cut their budgets and things like that. So WrestleMania ended up being the last thing I wrote about for a few publications because their budgets just kind of went away. And they have since figured out that they can do stuff online, and I've written a little bit for some of these publications since then, including wrestling actually for some of them. But anyway, at the time I was just kind of at a point where I didn't have as many outlets, and wrestling was always a tough sell. So I just started a website that kind of focused on wrestling mostly, but also included all the other aspects of pop culture that I enjoy, like music and art and comic books and movies and just pretty much whatever I want it to be. So then a year later, I reached a point where I had a had this blog going for a year, so I threw a big event at the Masquerade, which is a legendary music venue, but some other wrestling promotions have run shows there over the years, and I wanted to do basically a variety show where wrestling was the main, pretty much just like my blog, wrestling's the main attraction, and then we also have a band play and, you know, other, we have raffle prizes and vendors and things, and just have a big festival kind of atmosphere. And so I got Monstrosity Championship Wrestling, which was kind of they had done a few sort of preliminary shows, mostly just to entertain people in line for Atlanta Zombie Apocalypse, which was a sort of immersive haunted house attraction here in Atlanta. And it was never even, there was never any plan for it to be an ongoing thing. It was just, you know, we put some monster wrestlers in the ring and they wrestled each other while people were waiting in line to get into the haunted house. But I wanted something a little different, so I had MCW at this event, and it went well, and then MCW kind of became a thing out of that, and started doing shows on a monthly basis and started doing bigger events and did a bunch of stuff at Six Flags for Fright Fest a few years back. And in the meantime, Wrestling with Pop Culture won some Best Local Blog awards a couple times, and Creative Loafing, which is our local alternative paper. So both entities kind of continued growing, or at least, you know, achieving some kind of success. But over the past year or so, various things have come up in my personal life, so I kind of was just too busy to do an event. Usually I would do this event in March, because that was when I started the blog. And so this past March, I was working 12-hour days at my other job, and just there was no way to plan an event while working that kind of schedule. But during this hiatus, you know, MCW hadn't really done a proper show in more than a year. And people kept asking when's there going to be another MCW show, show and things like that. So when I had some time, I decided I was going to do it. And just happened to be that my birthday was on a Friday, which is MCW traditionally runs on Friday nights. So I basically put together a combined anniversary party and birthday party for myself. And then after we secured the date, it was announced that the Masquerade was closing at its location that it's been at for the past, I think, 21 years or so, and moving to a new location. So it made it, you know, that much more of a historic event, that this is going to be the last wrestling event ever in that building, which is going to be turned into mixed use, like shops and restaurants and stuff, which is kind of what's been going on in that area surrounding the Masquerade for the past few years. So the whole neighborhood has changed a lot. But anyway, yeah, it was a great event. It was on July 8th. We had Raven, did a little meet and greet beforehand, and then he kind of started the show.
So he didn't wrestle. He just was like,
he's got some really bad shoulder problems, and he doesn't wrestle a lot. He did wrestle up in somewhere, I think Dalton, Georgia, up in North Georgia the next night. But he wrestled Johnny Swinger, which is another former ECW guy who I think he spent some time in WWF or WWE. But anyway, I forget the name of that promotion. He did have a match, but I don't think it was a very long match. And he told me he prefers, if he's going to wrestle, he wants it to be like a 6-man tag match or something like that, where he's not required to put on a whole lot of the show.
Yeah, when he wrestled in NWA Texoma a year or so ago, a couple years ago, he was in a tag match for the main event. And so you know, there's that where he wouldn't have to be in the ring and do most of the work. The other guy did, the local hero guy. And but then also he did a lot of business with this little kid fan who he gave something for him to hold for him or whatever. And then the heels kept trying to mess with the kid, and he would, and they would defend the kid. And then the kid was actually running away from the heel at one point. And then at the end, you know, when the main guy, the local hero, does his finisher, Raven puts the kid over in the pinning. There was a lot of business, you know, fun business. So it wasn't, you know, where a lot of intensive wrestling, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. It was more the showman stuff. So it was a great main event. Yeah. So, Jonathan, the Wrestling with Pulp Culture is a great site, and like you said, it's perfectly named because it really it encompasses what the site's all about, and then these local events and you're being connected with the local, you know, scene with not just wrestling, but the other stuff and so on and so forth. Apparently Atlanta's got a very lively scene there from what I've understood and see. But how does it feel, or how surprising or not surprising or whatever is it that you're in this thing for 5 years now and it's doing that well?
Well, it's, you know, it went by really quickly and, you know, I guess, yeah, I'm surprised that I didn't really have much of a long-term plan when I started it. Like I said, it was kind of on a whim almost, and things just fell into place. When I was putting it together, people that had experience creating blogs were available to help me do that part, and this great artist named KRK Ryden, who's done a bunch of stuff with Devo and
oh, cool.
He, you know, he's got this very oddball kind of
aesthetic. Is he the guy that does the picture that you have for your?
Yeah, he did. He I met him when he was in town. Actually, I wrote an article for another publication about an art show that he had coming up in Atlanta, and then I went to the art show and met him, and he really liked the article I had written about his work, and we just kind of hit it off. And then I was talking to him a while later, and just I wasn't even soliciting him for anything. I was just telling him this idea I had for a blog because I didn't really see anything out there quite like it. And he's voluntarily, you know, he said, "Can I do a logo for you?" And I said, "Of course." And it's really more, it's a little too busy to be a logo, but
but it's fabulous.
Know, I used a little luchador head as the logo, basically, but you know, the bigger piece has a lot more going on.
Yes, it does. Which you can see there on the side. It's a great piece illustration. It really is, and it does. And like I said, it is very busy, and but it's got a lot going on. But I think it gets across the vibe of the site. Which, by the way, you kind of were on a cutting edge of that because in the realization. And we kind of touched on this back in the Hollywood Invades episode. But, you know, everybody else talks about boom periods of wrestling, you know, in the 90s and the 80s and the 50s and whatever. We've discussed that as well on the podcast. But, you know, I don't know whether the right it's the right word, but, you know, we really are in a boom period as much as we don't have a Stone Cold or the intensity of the Monday Night Wars or the big 80s Hulk Hogan, you know, mania. But wrestling has never been more integrated into mainstream culture in ever than it is now. I mean, ESPN is covering wrestling.
Yeah. Years ago when I started the site, that was the case, but it's definitely much more prevalent now.
Yeah, that's what I said. You were kind of, you know, on the front of that. So it really was a advantageous thing for your site because it's become more and more a mixture, you know, that you got, you know, rappers rapping about wrestling. You got, you know, it's just there's a big mixture. So, yeah, you were very good about that.
Well, thanks. The only thing at the time that I saw that was covering wrestling from that aspect was WWE Magazine, because they would do CD reviews and video game reviews and things like that that sometimes were not directly linked to their product or wrestling at all.
Right.
Just kind of like, you know, they know that wrestling fan base often also includes horror, sci-fi fans or
comic
sports
book
fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I'd, obviously whenever there's a direct link, like a movie with The Rock in it or something like that, I want to review that. But sometimes it'll just be, you know, I'm a wrestling fan, so if I like something else, and I figured there are probably other wrestling fans that like this thing too, so it doesn't, you know, I never made it a requirement that there has to be something directly related to wrestling whenever I review something or interview somebody or whatever. But, yeah, I remember at the time I was seeing this trend of more wrestlers being in movies or bands, you know, WWE, they've been doing this for a while, but they'll have bands that do an official theme song for a pay-per-view or something.
Yep.
So that's a connection right there. A lot of
and
times.
Jericho with, you know, doing not only his own band, but was on Dancing with the Stars and did a game show for a little bit.
Yep. And so, he's been in a few movies. He was in, I meant to mention this in our last show, actually, that the movie MacGruber. That had the Big Show and Jericho and I think Kennedy and MVP were in it. I forget. There were like five or six WWE wrestlers that were in that movie. And that was about that time when I was putting things together for my site. And, you know, I wish I could put some more energy into it. But obviously, until it becomes a main source of income, it's kind of, you know, I feel like it's been a little neglected over the past year or two. I don't get to update it as much as I'd like to, but I'm glad it's still there and glad I can use it as an excuse to put on these events and stuff. And we had a pretty good attendance, had probably close to 200 people, which considering that the same night there was a Black Lives Matter march on the interstate that goes through Atlanta, a lot of people just weren't able to make it. And actually the ring announcer, he broke his leg pretty severely at the event. It had nothing to do with wrestling. It was actually when the band, Cancer Slug was performing and he was in the ring dancing around and decided to do some sort of trick. I don't really know. I didn't see it happen, and I've heard secondhand reports. But basically, he flipped over the top, the top rope, and landed in such a way that he broke his fibula. And
this is why you don't do this at home.
Because of the protesting march on the interstate, the EMTs had a hard time getting there.
Oh Lord!
To get him. So I think. Considering all that was, and there were a lot of other events going on that night that would probably attract a similar crowd, or at least a little bit of crossover. So considering all that, I think we did really well.
Great.
And, you know, I'm happy that I was able to be part of the last wrestling event at that masquerade. And, it looks like I'll be, putting together events at the new masquerade too. So we'll be the first wrestling event at the new venue, hopefully sometime around Halloween, because that's really the most appropriate time for Monstrosity Championship Wrestling.
Oh yeah.
Real, I know a little bit about the Monstrosity Championship Wrestling, but could you explain to the listeners what that is, because it's really cool?
It is professional wrestling, WWE style wrestling in a wrestling ring, with a referee and commentators and a ring announcer and wrestlers who happen to be wolfmen and zombies and vampires and, cyborgs and things of that nature. So it's, I don't know. There are other promotions that do that a little bit. like well, Chick Ciccara.
I was about to say, it's maybe a little more specifically themed thing like Ciccara, which Ciccara just has all kinds of different things, but yours is definitely more focused on the horror. Which, by the way, that goes all the way back to Memphis. For whatever reason, Jerry Jarrett would love to bring in things like that.
Yeah, and
had the Mummy, you know.
Right.
And
it's definitely heavily inspired by a lot of the Memphis stuff, especially when it's in an environment that's more family-friendly, where there are more kids, like the Six Flags events, and some more, you know, MCW's been part of several different horror-themed festivals and things in Atlanta over the years, and typically it runs in a bar, so it's an adult show, but oddly enough, it's not that different, you know, the language has changed slightly, but other than that, the humor and the events that happen aren't really toned down all that much for kids. It's just, you know, you change a few words here and there and it suddenly is family friendly instead of offensive.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, when we were running those shows at Six Flags, we were doing four shows a day every Saturday and Sunday for 5 weeks. And so it wasn't as structured, you know, there weren't feuds that built up, and you know, the same way they would be during any other MCW show. It was more, there were a lot of battle royals and things like that. So there were mummies and Freddy Krueger's and Jason and things, you know, Leatherface and stuff like that, that they wouldn't normally appear at an MCW show, but because it was a different kind of audience and they wanted, you know, you need something for them to recognize and be able to relate to, I guess, instead of just random monsters. Or, you know, if they're people who've never been to an MCW show previously, they wouldn't understand some of the storylines that were playing out. So it was just more, here's Freddy versus Jason and things like that.
Yeah.
Well, only two things I know for sure is one, that it sounds like something I would enjoy the heck out of, and that it is something that Jim Cornette would hate.
Yeah. I have actually wondered what he would think of it, because was he involved with Memphis wrestling at all, or just?
Well, he was a fan, and early on he was taking pictures, and then of course eventually that led him to being a manager. So, but he's very well aware of that. And actually, it's funny because that did come up. I mean, one of his listeners, you know, kind of brought that up with the Memphis crazier stuff and so on and so forth, in response to his criticisms of Ciccara or, you know, Joey Ryan or all that other stuff, that in this and the other. And he defended it by saying that they were never presented as actually the Mummy or this, that, and the other, that it was this, you know, it was a kind of like Undertaker. It was a show of intimidation or making the person doubt, or, you know, what is he really, supernatural, or is he just using tricks or whatever? So that was the fine line difference to him, that, you know, it's not, it was presented as, not presented that this is absolutely the Mummy, you know, this, but it, more likely it's a guy dressed up as a mummy to be intimidating or whatever. So yeah, take that as you will.
Well, you know, I don't know what he would
I'm pretty sure he would have a criticism of it, but that, and I love Jim, but he tends to be a grumpy bear about that type of thing. But you know, it's not the first time that I've found he contradicts himself.
Yeah.
He has a real big problem with comedy and wrestling, and let's face it, Jim did a lot of comedy and wrestling.
Yeah.
Which is reviewed in the whole Great American Bash, and the best part of the whole show was the comedic stuff of him getting in, you know, and so I'm, come on, Jim, come on.
I'm not sure if I covered everything that you wanted, but it was a great event. Raven was Raven got in the ring to kind of kick off the show, and thanks everyone for supporting indie wrestling. And
I will say that's a great choice as your star event, you know, or guest star, you know.
Mm-hmm. There have been bigger names that appeared there previously, namely Luke Gallows, mostly because he's local. He didn't. He did get involved in a match, but he didn't wrestle. And but you know, he's not a monster or a horror, even though he was Fake Kane. I don't know. I don't know if more people showed up because he was there, but I don't know if more people showed up because Raven was there either. But I liked that Raven was there. I think he's a good fit. You know, there are certain people.
I think Festus is kind of in that area.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's, you know, kind of catatonic unless he hears the ring bell. And you know, so that touches on the horror, I think.
Well, he was his gimmick when he was in Deep South Wrestling, when it was still a developmental territory, which was in McDonough, Georgia, just south of Atlanta. He was the Freakin' Deacon, and he was kind of like the Barbarian or something. But you know, he didn't speak. He was just this kind of crazy brute Barbarian type guy. But anyway,
just real quick before we leave Luke Gallows, Amber Gallows, his wife, is the current NWA Women's Champion, and she makes it. I don't know where this. I don't know particularly why, but she has defended her title here in Sherman, you know, consistently since she's won it. So, and that's where she won it, was here in Sherman, North Texas. So we're getting to see a lot of her, and so on and so forth. And I got to say, Luke, for a guy that looks like you, you're doing great, buddy.
Yeah, I met her that same when WrestleMania was in town, and she was dating some other guy, like some indie wrestler guy from the Carolinas. But she had a promotion at the time called Arena Chicks, and. And she gave me a DVD. That was one of the first things I ever reviewed for my blog, was her Arena Chicks DVD.
Very cool. Well, you know, it's funny because it undercut, for me, Enzo's great promo on the club when he talked about how ugly Luke was and the idea that he wouldn't have any women. I was sitting there thinking, he's got a woman, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised. I guess it's just because there's only one NWA affiliate in Georgia now, and I guess that's why she hasn't defended that title here very much, because she and Luke still live south Georgia, or I think it's about an hour south of Atlanta.
Right. Well, I know that the new NWA, or I say new, but the newest regime of NWA that runs the show are based in Texas, so that could be a lot to do with it. I mean, I know Houston became like their center of things, and I think Dallas is a big deal. And because we're here and we have an end, I mean, it still boggles my mind, even though NWA is not what it once was. But here in Sherman, we have an NWA promotion, so we get a lot of stuff. I mean, Rob Conway defended his title here a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it is an interesting thing, but yeah, she's been here quite often, and you know, that's good.
Yeah. There's another guy, another local guy named Tyson Dean. That's the, I think he's the NWA North American champion.
Right.
And I see him posting on Facebook a lot about defending his title everywhere except Georgia probably a lot out there.
Yeah. This just reminds me that we really do need to get to that indie show as soon as possible. But thank you, Jonathan, for that wonderful report. We congratulate you on your fifth year, and keep on rolling because it's a great site, and apparently it's a great show that you put on, a celebration. So I hope that continues. And so now we're going to go have a little message, and when we come back, we're going to talk some New Era WWE.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast delivers the latest sci-fi news, plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will. Listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tidarian. Mind tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi. From a certain point of view.
Welcome to Name That Wrestler, the game show where our contestants have to name that wrestler with just 3 one-word hints that are deemed capable of guessing the wrestler correctly by the commissioner. You all work as a group to come up with the answer, and you get one and only one answer, so make it count. All right, and for this edition of Name That Wrestler, we have John and Jonathan as our contestants. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you.
All right, so y'all complained last time that it was a little too easy, so we've ramped it up a little bit this time. So, the first Name That Wrestler, you get 3 one-word hints.
I'm so excited.
And they are machine, announcer, and orange.
Oh, Taz.
Correct. Correct. All right.
That was good. I had to think about that one. That's good.
This one you might have to think about a little bit more. Think outside the box a little bit. The 3 one-word hints are alcohol, vulgar, and crotch.
Alcohol, vulgar, crotch. Now this is a wrestler.
It is a wrestler.
Okay.
Not just male wrestlers. Hint.
Another hint.
ODB?
ODB, yeah.
Correct.
Good, Jonathan, good.
Where's she been lately?
I don't know. Yeah. That is, ODB was my favorite women's wrestler.
Hey, one of us drafted her for ESO Pro Fed. Who was that?
Was it me?
I think it was
either me or Jeff, or I think it might have been.
No, it was Jeff. I think it was Jeff, actually. Yeah. I really do. But now, I think Jeff. I think Jeff loved that you did. So.
Yeah,
we all did. So, yeah, we all love ODB.
Yeah. All right. Now, this last one, you're going to have to put your thinking caps on for this one. Maybe. The 3 one-word hints are pigtails, lollipop, and Lodi.
Pigtails, lollipop, and Lodi.
Lodi the wrestler?
Yes. But that's not the wrestler, but that's part of the
well, obviously. But he's but they're connected to Lodi in some way, obviously.
I'm trying to remember if
Lollipop
Daphne was ever connected to Lodi.
I told y'all this was hard.
He did.
didn't Stevie Richards have pigtails sometimes?
Yeah, it seems like that's true.
I don't remember the lollipops, though.
So was this part of the mess?
What's that?
Something Lodi did. Was this part of when Lodi was part of Raven's flock?
I don't think so. So, I don't think so. This wasn't it was in that time period, but he wasn't part of the flock. This was like a separate gimmick run he had.
So then
I'm remembering the guy now because he kind of looked like Billy Gunn. But it wasn't.
You mean Lodi or somebody else?
No, the other guy that was paired with him. And
right. Okay.
Kind of ambiguously gay.
Yeah. What was his name? Holy crap.
Am I allowed to use Google?
No.
Wasn't there, they were a tag team or kind of a couple, and didn't the other one start with an L?
Yes.
Y'all are getting close.
I Googled it, sort of. So
all right. Name that wrestler, Jonathan.
Lenny Lane.
That's... Lenny Lane! Oh, yeah.
Correct.
I don't know if
Lenny
I don't know.
Lodi, yes. Yes.
I would have remembered that, though.
I cannot claim that I would have pulled it out of my butt, but
I was a huge fan of Lenny Lane. I have no idea why. Like I just
no,
loved
I remember I liked him too. But so, but yeah, I could mysteries the mists of time. Yeah, Lenny and Lodi.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah yeah. That back was way the... for that was for well full time for Chuck and
oh,
Billy.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it looks. He looks like a cross between Christian and Lex Luger. Like I'm looking at pictures of him now.
Oh, Lex! I could definitely see Lex Luger. He's got these weird, like cheekbones, like the way his face is.
Well, you know, in the whole ponytails thing, that was definitely influenced by Adrian Street, who would do that. You know, that was part of his look. I mean, the old exoticness and everything, but he always did pigtails, too. So. Odd.
There was a little bit of Chris Jericho there, too.
Well, that was, I think that they either, I think, I'm wanting to think that they were a team a little bit, or something. There was some connection with them a little bit, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for playing Name That Wrestler.
That was a lot better. That was great. That made me have to. Well, I didn't get the last one at all. So the other two I actually had to think about. So and then Jonathan got one of them. So both of them, really, two of them. But I got one.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We need to tape a promo, guys. If you had to encapsulate the roundtable in one catchphrasey kind of way, what would you say?
Rampant dickery? Ridonkulous? let's not go with shrink. That you know. The first one was good. The second one was great. After that, it kind of, you know.
Guys, promo. Stay on topic here. Okay. Stay on topic.
Stay on topic. Oh, no, I'm going in.
Stay on topic. Stay on topic.
Topic.
Red leader, I'm... No, I'm sorry.
Stay on topic.
I can't see it. It's up to you, Red 5.
Oh, God.
Where's the promo,
so,
Luke?
Promo. The Roundtable. Brought to you by Revolution SF. Tough love for sci-fi. Available at revolutionsf.com and iTunes.
All right, this is Jonathan Williams with WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, and I'm here with Congo, Ring of Honor's. He was part of Ring of Honor's Top Prospect Tournament in 2014, and he is in Georgia for last night for Universal Independent Wrestling and today for Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment's Freaknik, as well as Brutal Bob Evans seminar yesterday. How are you, Congo?
I'm good.
Good. So, like many people, my introduction to Congo was in the Ring of Honor Top Prospect Tournament, excuse me, a couple years ago, and I've seen you on Ring of Honor TV here and there since then. So, for those who are not aware of what happened, where you're from, and where you came from before that, how you came to be on Ring of Honor's radar, who is Congo?
Congo is from South America. I moved out here in 2007, I want to say, and I met Bob Evans, who's training. And then I went on my own, and then I went to the very first Ring of Honor camp in 2010. And then after that, I was on their radar a little, then I disappeared for a bit. Had to find myself and find who Congo really is. And then I came back around 2012, the end of 2012, back under their radar, and then I was able to do the 2014 Top Prospect Tournament for Ring of Honor.
All right. So wrestling brought you to America from South America?
Yes, it did. I was in South America. I'm not going to say where I'm from. No, you don't need to know that. I found the tape of Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior. And that's what I wanted to do once I saw that VHS. And I knew that I had to leave South America to pursue that dream.
What was it about that? Was that the WrestleMania match?
Yes, it was.
Okay. What was it about that match? I would imagine, based on what I've seen from you in the ring, that maybe
you saw something in the Ultimate Warrior. That
it was just two big sons of bitches going at it, and the people were in awe. And I want people to look at me that same way. And why not? Why not do it in front of 60,000-70,000 people?
Right.
You know?
So since that tournament, where's Kongo been since then? Like I said, I've seen you on TV a little bit. I know you just did a bunch of Ring of Honor shows.
Yes, I just wrestled Dalton Castle in Rhode Island. I was just in Canada. I was in Seattle. So I'm traveling a lot more. And my goal is to go back to Ring of Honor and be a full-time roster member and get my eventual rematch with Ray Rowe. And also get my match with Elgin, because after that match, he jackknifed powerbombed me. I don't know if everybody remembers that. But he came in that ring and he got in my face, and he gave me a backhand fist, and then he powerbombed me. I haven't forgot. I will get my revenge. I will.
Well, I know he's now with New Japan Pro Wrestling, who were part of these recent Ring of Honor events you were part of. Was he there at all?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't there in Rhode Island. But he was. I think he did the pay-per-view this past weekend, last weekend, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was there these last couple of shows, so I'm not 100% sure.
So today, you made your tag team debut with Action Ortiz. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? He mentioned you're the king of the jungle.
He's the king
of the streets. So yeah. How did those two things come together?
We got tired of being overlooked. He just did the top prospect tournament this year.
Mm-hmm.
He excelled. He didn't win, but he stood out like I did in the year I did it.
Right.
And, you know, there's other guys that are getting a lot more, I don't want to say matches, but they're getting a lot more looks and opportunities than we are. So we decided that we're going to just, you know, join forces and take what we want. That's just what we're going to do. And who's going to stop us?
Right. Well, are there particular tag teams in Ring of Honor that you'd like to...
Punch in the mouth? Yeah, sure. Of course. The Briscoes is one.
Of course.
War Machine.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever else is there, we'll punch a young buck in the mouth. Why not? They can do all the super kicks they want, but when we punch them in the mouth, we'll super kick them home.
So where else... You primarily wrestle in the New England Northeast area. What other promotions do you work for?
I work for Top Rope back home in the New England area. Well, what I call home now. In the New England area, these next couple weeks I'm traveling. I'll be in North Carolina next weekend. I'm wrestling MVP at the end of the month, May 28th in Virginia for Fusion Wrestling.
Okay.
I'll be in Pennsylvania on the 27th before that. But next week I'll be in North Carolina. I'm working for Carino's company.
Yeah. Okay. What is it called?
I think it's PWF.
Right.
No, I'm not 100% sure. I'm sorry, Carino. But yeah, so me and Ben, we debuted today. We're going to try to do what we can. But right now I'm booked these places by myself. But me and Ben, you're going to hear a lot more of Concrete Jungle. I guarantee you that.
And where can people find you online? Does Kongo have a
Twitter? Yes, wildman_Kongo. Instagram is the same, wildman_Kongo. I have a fan page on Facebook, so you can hit me up on one of those three. You know, buy a shirt, support me,
right?
Help me keep my visa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other than that, just if you want me to punch people in the mouth, book me. That's what we do.
That's your specialty, is punching people in the mouth.
Yeah.
Close fists are illegal in wrestling, though.
I don't know the rules. I don't know what you're talking about. There's no rules. It's a fight. Who's wrestling? You see me chain wrestling?
I did not.
No, you saw me punching people in the mouth, right?
I did.
Yeah, that's what we do.
All right.
That's what we do.
Cool. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And I'll see you in the ring sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Hey, cats and kittens, we're here to talk the big news of the big change in WWE, starting with the draft on SmackDown previous to the last, and then leading into Battleground, the last normal co-mingling draft involved the entire roster, other than, of course, always the big shows like SummerSlam and WrestleMania. And the all-new WWE Raw and mostly brand-new SmackDown, though there's some things to talk about there. But anyway, we're going to talk about all this. But first, I want to mention that on July 24th of 2013, Earth Station One's director Mike Faber and his cohort Michael Gordon and Bobby Nash, who was part of the show at that time, decided to do a show on professional wrestling, classic wrestling, and he invited myself and Nick Alheim and Joe Crow as their guests, and that essentially birthed VSO Pro Wrestling Roundtable. And so that's just about when our third year, you know, basically 3 years ago it all began. And not only that, but as most regular listeners may know, we did have a year that we were kind of dormant. The old show went 18 episodes. And when we resurrected it late last year, we've now done, this will be the 19th episode of the new era, so we've passed that milestone as well. So we got a lot to be happy about, and so yippee-ki-yippee-yo. So
yeah, that's cool. I'm happy to be a part of it now. I wasn't in the previous incarnation. I didn't even know you.
no, but it's been a good teaming, and you have done a fantastic job helping keeping the trains running on time. Thank you, Richard.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
And we thank Jonathan for helping make this show so much better with his connections and the interviews and all that, because that has made the show all the better, too, I think. So thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for letting me be part of it. How did this particular... I guess there's kind of a core group of people that's consistently involved now. How did I guess the three of us come together and the other people that are on here regularly?
Well, I decided that, you know, because I was part of the old show and was there from the very beginning at the July 24th when we did the first wrestling conversation on the actual main flagship show, First Station One. I just was wanting to do it again, and Nick was just not able to do it, and Alex wasn't able to do it, and I tried a couple of other times where it just floated out there on the ESO Pro Facebook page of trying to get, you know, something going, and then right before Royal Rumble last year, I was down and determined to do it. And finally got some responses, and one of the ones was Richard. And basically the crux was that we didn't have anybody that could handle the production side of it. And Richard said that he could do that, and that's what really birthed it. If it had been for Richard, we wouldn't be doing this.
Well, and even though I said I could do it, I didn't really know that I could do it because I've learned a lot on the way. But, I mean, I knew...
At least you had the guts to give it, you know. Then that's, and like I said, this is not hyperbole. This podcast would not exist without Richard Jewell, and that's just the truth, because that allowed us to come back and has allowed us to continue. We've been consistent. We've had some great shows, and we're getting better as we go along. But that's what it was. And then Jonathan, you answered my call. You know, and I knew your website, so. And you were a regular member of ESO Pro Facebook, and I just knew that there was guys there that had a lot to say about wrestling. We just needed to give them an opportunity to do so. But then you, unfortunately, had one of your working on a movie. I guess it was what it was, and then you weren't able to join us until a little bit later. But we knew you were in the wings, and then the others, like Joe Crow, he was there from the beginning, and he comes in every once in a while. And Jeff Yelton is a friend of Joe's, so. It's just one of the things. This one born out, kind of ironically, out of DSO Pro Facebook, which continued even though the show wasn't, you know, going on anymore, you know. So,
And I also want to say, like, you know, as much praise as you give me, it really, really wouldn't happen without Faber, without director Faber, because
That's true.
He has helped me and been patient with me a few times where I might have made a mistake or two, and he's helped walk me through it, and he does a lot of behind the scenes stuff for this show. So,
Director Faber is a friend of the show. Of course, he's appeared on our show. He's a wrestling fan as well, and he was always wanting the show to come back, and so he facilitated everything he could to help us make that possible. And so we thank Director Faber for not only giving us the opportunity to be part of the Earth Station One family, but to really, you know, back us up and help us when we needed it. So yes,
yeah.
And Michael Gordon, who would be on our show every time if he could, but he's, you know, he's got so much else going on.
He does about 19 other podcasts a week, I think.
Right. But he's a big wrestling fan, and he always loves it when he comes, and we always love having him. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, so. So anyway, yeah, so thank you guys for listening, and we're going to continue on with this because we love it. And now that's turn our attention to the new era of WWE, which I really do need to change that name. It makes sense now, but I mean, it's going to be weird whenever, you know, in 10 years from now, people call it the new era. You know, they need to come up with some kind of delineation, like the Attitude or the
PG. Well, didn't they come up with a name and then it changed again? Or because it was the reality, they had the reality era.
Yes.
I think. And then, the PG era.
Very ironically, that comes from CM Punk.
Did it?
Yeah, he actually, when he did the pipe bomb interview and then all that stuff afterwards, he was on an interview right after that with somebody, and they brought up the Attitude Era, and he said, well, we're not going to go back to the Attitude Era, but this is the reality era.
Mm.
And that kind of stuck with a lot of people.
I mean, it fit.
It did, yeah.
So in starting that, really, it was Battleground that kind of led the way into the draft and
No, draft was before Battleground.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the draft was last Tuesday.
Oh, and then Battleground. Oh, that's right, because I thought it was weird that they did it that way.
Yeah, no, draft was first, yes.
Okay.
And the draft was kind of... they posted pretty good ratings and this, that, and the other, but I'm not really a fan of how they did it. I mean, I was excited.
It was boring.
It was very boring, very dull. They didn't have any reactions or anything. Actually, it's really weird. They did of the NXT guys.
Yeah.
And whenever they cut to the NXT, Performance Center with all the NXT talent sitting around the ring or watching the screen, that's when the show picked up in energy because they were into it. And of course, why wouldn't they be? Because they didn't know if they would get chosen or not. You know, because nobody knew very previously who, you know, they don't tell anybody. So their reactions were absolutely genuine. Talk about the reality era. Their reactions were absolutely genuine, and it was a lot of energy with it. And so they, if we could have done that all through the show with all the talent, that would have been a lot better. But it did what it needed to do, and I liked a lot of the picks. I would have to, because I mean, when I did the article with Nick Alheim for needlessthings.com, I'd picked the SmackDown side. Well, he picked the Raw side, and actually half of my picks ended up on SmackDown. So. Yeah, so I mean, I think there are some others that should have went to SmackDown. I think the biggest one everybody talks about, including himself, spoke about it. Cesaro should have been on SmackDown, but sorry.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I saw that, and I wondered if it was a little pipe bomb like, and I wondered if he got any backlash from that interview that he did.
Apparently, you know, and this is how Vince can be a very strange dude, but he apparently liked it. And it's going to probably lead to another little, you know, possibility for Cesaro on Raw. So let's hope so. He also kind of followed it up with, a little bit where he went on with the pre-show guys for Raw, where he was talking about it was the Battleground preview, because he was talking about the his companion, or about the Owens and Zane fight was coming up, and he kind of turned it into something about himself. So it kind of seems to be the new angle or kind of character they're going with him. And so that I like that. And actually, I'm glad you brought that up, Jonathan, because another thing about that was actually superior to SmackDown Live's draft itself was the whole secondary show that went along with it. I forget what they called it. Anyway,
on the network.
Yeah, on the network. And that was far better. Because of some of the, you know, with Cesaro's shoot and Sheamus is very KO coming out all pissed off, and even the horrible botch by Kalisto, which is, you know, at least more entertaining. So I mean, that was actually more interesting than the actual show. But and I'm hoping. And probably putting my hopes in the wrong place, but if they did like what Cesaro did, and there was a couple others that did it kind of like that, Dolph kind of was very honest and candid. I'm hoping maybe that's a new direction that they're kind of going with. I mean, you know, allowing these guys to be a little bit more themselves and be a little more honest. So who knows?
Well, I hope so, and then hopefully that can help define the proper name for this era.
Yeah, right.
But as far as the draft show goes, I think the previous draft shows that they used to do were a big deal, and they would have matches with stipulations that affected the draft. You know, like
I know
they couldn't do a whole lot of that because there weren't people who were signed to a particular show yet. But as the show progress, they could have done that once, you know, so-and-so is now a Raw guy, so he could face someone who's now a SmackDown guy, and then whoever wins gets an extra pick for their show or whatever. But they didn't do anything like that. The matches had no bearing on anything, not even Battleground. You know, it was just like, here's a throwaway match. The whole show was just weird. But
which is something that's plagued WWE for a long time, where they're just one of the biggest issues. We discussed this not too long ago. One of the biggest issues is not the wrestling product itself. They've got some of the best wrestlers in the world now, and they put on fantastic matches. The production values are fantastic, except we got a little tired. So now that's been fixed, because both SmackDown and Raw look different now. And not even just different with the sets and whatever, but different with the way that they're filming it. We'll get to that later. But anyway, the biggest problem they've had is actually good storylines. And that seems to be changing to a degree, too, because we've had two fantastic matches, one on Battleground and one on Raw that we'll get into later, that both had incredible storylines that had these wonderful endings. And that's what made them great matches, you know, on top of just the action itself. But before we leave the draft, I am getting to Battleground. I want to take a moment to vent, because I, of course, listened to a lot of podcasts and went on a lot of websites and went to the dirt sheets and wrestling with regret and Walk Culture and all these guys and so on and so forth. And so I've listened to a lot of coverage of this draft, and particularly, you know, the top 10 or whatever. And I kept hearing all this stuff about what it is that there is this thing that's happened where kayfabe meets smartdom. And as it's increased to the point where, you know, obviously on the internet wrestling community, they're a smart crowd. And sometimes I think that gets in the way of their viewing of wrestling as an entity to itself. Because the example I'm going to give here that's wanting me to vent is that, of course, we know that Seth Rollins was the number one pick overall and was drafted to Raw. And then the WWE champion, Dean Ambrose, was the second pick. And there was a lot of guys that were like saying, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't they, you know, why wouldn't Raw, you know, get champion first? And that is totally speaking from a smart mark. You know, we're commenting on wrestling as the WWE show that's put on and is the obviously fake wrestling, so on and so forth, rather than thinking about the story, which is what should be. And it makes perfect sense for Stephanie to sign Seth over Dean based on her character that we've seen in the past. Why wouldn't she get Seth? She had complete confidence that Seth was going to end up being the champion.
Yeah.
And that's who she'd rather have. So you have to take it from that point of view, not what you think would be the logical thing for the real Stephanie or the real whoever's running Raw to pick, but who the characters are and why they would pick the people.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And that's something that annoys me about wrestling in general is, and I guess, you know, the industry is partially to blame for that because it's so open now. They talk about it on podcasts and interviews and stuff openly, how it actually works. But I, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, it can never go back now. But I don't agree with that. I think if it started being handled a certain way and protected, obviously not the same way it used to be because it's a different time and the internet changes things, but you know, that's why CM Punk's pipe bomb thing was what it was, and that's why
exactly
Cesaro's thing. You know, people think there's some reality happening right here.
Exactly, and that's why the reality thing was working, and why it was the way to go. Because we discussed this way back on you know in the first year of this podcast, we had one that was completely off. Kayfabe and whether Kayfabe's dead or not, and I maintained and showed this that Kayfabe is not dead. CM Punk proved that. Other stuff has proven that. Anybody who's went to an indie show knows, you know, that it isn't. You know,
yeah. You can use dirt sheets and podcasts and all the things that are now part of the culture that weren't in the 70s and 80s. You can use those things to work the fans in a different way.
Absolutely. And so, you know, you like you said, the stuff with Punk did, then Cesaro and the other stuff they did with the network, if they allow these guys to speak about the fact that I'm not happy that I'm going to Raw, I think I fit better on SmackDown, and it completely, you know, you could look at it as that the Claudio Castillo is talking about, you know, the WWE, you know, powers that be, but it can certainly could as easily be Cesaro talking about Stephanie and Daniel Bryan and Shane. You know, there's that edge of reality versus the non-reality, and that's if you ride that edge, that's the new kayfabe,
right?
You know, that's the new place where you know you just don't know for sure, and that makes you buy into the story all the more. I think.
Daniel Bryan thing was a good example of that. I think that was done pretty well, where you know it there was some reality to that. He wasn't the guy that they thought was going to be the face of the company.
Absolutely, yes.
And then you know they had to work. That, you know, work with the audience reaction and what he was saying and what they were doing and what was actually going on, where they were trying to promote people like Randy Orton over him, but the fans weren't having it. So they had to just kind of roll with that and make it work for that WrestleMania.
Or Batista, the whole Batista thing. So, yeah absolutely. And here's the deal. You've got that's a perfect example, and then you've got even more recently, you've got the whole thing with Zayn and KO, which they built a story there, the two hating each other, even though you've got stuff like Golden Truth and other stuff that kind of plays with, and not Golden Truth, that really fair to them, but you know what I'm saying, where the other stuff that like you said is too open, or maybe it isn't, you know, that there isn't that idea that the characters are real or the characters' motivations and storylines are real. But that comes off real, even though anybody who really knows it knows that they really true are the best of friends, but that they're playing it so well and building it so well that you buy into it and you buy into the story and you buy into their hatred. And when they have a blow off match like that with the way that it ended, it's just perfect. It's just beautiful, you know, and that reason it is because of that damn story and the characters involved in the story.
Well, that's kind of like what we talked about a few episodes ago with the Bullet Club, where they're, this is something WWE hasn't done in a long time, where they're acknowledging what these guys have done elsewhere.
Yes.
They're not directly saying, you know, they had these battles in Ring of Honor or anything like that, but they are referencing these guys have been the best of friends and they're in biggest rivals for whatever, 11 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah, they don't get into specifics, but they give the general backstory of guys that they just didn't come out of the, you know, the blue that they've had these, you know, storied careers.
Right.
If you want to know more about it, you can go on Google and find out.
Yeah, exactly. You can go to their Wikipedia pages and find out, oh, he used to be Kevin Steen, and they did actually have this huge rivalry somewhere else, and it's carried over here.
Yes. And they kind of started that a little bit with Punk, you know, when they started really, you know, talking about his past and Daniels as well and their connection and so on and so forth when they were feuding. So there was a little bit of that then too, where they kind of, you know, they hinted that, you know, obviously these guys, well, they definitely with Daniel, where they were talking about how he was the indie darling guy, mm-hmm. and they pissed on him for it and all this and the other. So yeah, they've definitely opened that bar. And then also, by the way, talk about the edge of reality versus, you know, how you buy into it. And I completely lost my train of thought. Hey, Richard, well, how about you say something about all this?
So I think, you know, I've only watched one episode of that CWC, the Cruiserweight Classic. But if you watch that, I mean, it is very much like you could believe it. Like, you could believe it was a real thing. And I think it's all about presentation and the way the announcers talk. And, I mean, not so much. I mean, yes, storylines too, but I think the announcers can sell it or destroy it. You know, and I think they're, you know, maybe not the announcers themselves, but the people telling them what to do, Vince McMahon, and what to say, you know. But I think a lot of these people would announce like it was a real thing that they were watching. I mean, but...
Well, yeah, and not only that, but one of the things that I really liked about the new Raw was the way that they're presenting it. You know, it looks, and it's obvious that this is what they're going for, but, you know, with them, whenever the camera goes to the announce team with Cole and Graves and the other guy.
Brian Saxon.
Brian Saxon, that poor guy. Anyway, Brian Saxon. When they cut to them, they're standing with the arena and the ring behind them. And if you're a sports guy, you know that that's been something that a lot of the sports broadcasts do, you know, have been doing for ages.
Well, that's what Nitro used to do, too.
Yes, yeah. True. But and it gives it more of that type of event type of feeling. So I think it's very effective, and I think it changes the dynamic quite a bit. Yeah.
And along the same lines, I really like the post-match interviews, which is more of a UFC kind of thing, or I guess, like any other sport.
Yes, yes.
And
also
in the ring
or coming out of the ring or whatever.
Yeah. Changing it up. I mean, you know, a lot of times it was either only in ring, whether when it was a scheduled interview and it went long time or whatever, or there was these backstage things with this, you know, with obvious sets where they were, you know, designed to be interviews and so forth. Now they're just catching them either right outside the ring or in the ring or back or you know, or whatever. And also they changed the way that they're working the camera to just being, you know, just one way. Like, for instance, you know, they showed the, when they were showing the entrance of all the six or the four guys in the Fatal Four Way, I noticed that they didn't do the camera, did the same for each one, particularly where they followed KO through Gorilla behind him. Oh. You know, they had the camera behind him. You know, the camera guy was behind him and was following him.
Yeah, and then so, wasn't Roman Reigns was like, they were way out on the other side of the arena.
Yeah. And it just makes it more dynamic. It just changes. It's not the same static thing all over, you know, all the time.
And that made me wonder if he was going to come through the audience like he used to, because they panned back so far.
Yeah, but then he didn't, and it's like, okay. Well, and then going to SmackDown, one of the Battle Royal, where the camera was really close up on the action.
I loved it.
And going back and forth. I loved the heck out of that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was actually my favorite part of SmackDown, like just the way the camera... It was, I don't even know what to compare it to, because I'd never really seen it.
And down to even smaller things, you know, just to make it different. And that's really all, other than the, getting the storylines going, which it seems like they're doing, but also just making things different and not boring and static as they have been for way too long. Like, for instance, when Raw brought out the roster, they did the normal thing where they're all out on the stage and so on and so forth, but then on SmackDown they had them all the way around the ring on the apron.
I didn't like that, though. I liked it better when they were up on the stage.
Well, preference is fine, but just saying it's different, and at least they're trying to do something different. I'm giving credit for that. But, you know, it was different and interesting.
It was different, but it was the same as far as, like, why did SmackDown even have to go that route? Why did they even have to open it up the same exact way as Raw did? I mean,
that's a fair assessment.
And I think SmackDown, if you really look at it, SmackDown looks like the new Raw, and Raw looks like the new SmackDown. Like, SmackDown just reminded me of Raw. Like, the wrestling I don't think was as good. And now I think that Raw, I think, was a much more entertaining show.
Oh, well, no. And, you know, it absolutely was. But you know, I'm just going to give SmackDown the benefit of the doubt that they tried a little bit of stuff. It didn't quite go off as well. But, you know, and I'm not saying that this was the only reason. But, you know, Raw did have an incredible women's title match. And two fantastic, fatal four ways, and the introduction of Finn Balor, you know, and basically his ascension, you know, to being a top guy immediately, all of that helped make Raw a big deal. But that it wasn't all, because it was an execution all the way through. Raw was absolutely superior. There's no question.
So I watched the Hulu versions, as y'all know, but on Raw, I didn't see us, like, every time a wrestler, the wrestler always was already at the stage. On the normal show, did it show them coming out from backstage? Normally? Like, usually, I mean, by the time we got there, like Finn Balor, he was already standing on the stage, and all the other people were too whenever their music started. So I don't know if Hulu just cut the backstage stuff or even the entrance. Like, I don't even know where the entrance is on the stage. If there was one, I mean,
I can't say. I don't. It didn't.
Like, it wasn't something I noticed.
Yeah, me either.
Like, you know, used to it had that. Like double that door bit, kind of thing.
Yeah, that comes out
and they come out. But yeah. I couldn't see an entrance. And like I said, I watched the Hulu stuff, so I didn't really
I'll have
attention.
To go back and look, because I can't say that I know for sure. And I would think they would notice that, because I kind of noticed those sort of things. And I was hoping there would be something different in how they're going to do the stage or ramp or whatever.
Did either of you notice in this... Brian Silverback's mentioned this on the last episode about how they'll go to commercial during a match, but I think it only happened once on Raw, but they went to commercial, but you could still see the match happening.
Yes.
I thought that was great.
Oh,
that was
really?
Fantastic. Yes.
But they only did it once, right?
Yes, only once.
I wonder why they don't do that every time.
I don't know. Maybe because it was the key importance of that particular thing, I guess.
There's nothing of importance happened during that.
No, it didn't. So I don't know. Maybe they're just playing with it and seeing. But I hope they go with it, because I think that's the perfect way to do it. You know, if you have to break in a match, don't, you know, do that. Because I can't remember exactly, but I mean, the Charlotte and Sasha match was long.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they had to break for that. So
they used to. I don't know if they still do this on the app, because this was pre-network when I would watch it. But it used to, you know, you could watch during the commercial breaks on the app. You know, in case something happened, you know, they tried to give it a sense of...
Yeah, the whole second screen thing.
Yeah. Right. But I don't know if they still do that on the app.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so, you know. Well, you know, talking about the reality thing, you know, we're talking about Sasha and Charlotte. The way that they handled that, I mean, it came off as a total big match thing. It just felt like a big match. The presentation, you know, the announcing of it, the whole preamble of it, and the way that Cole and them actually called it.
When they introduced them and they were both standing in the ring facing the camera.
Yes, and the ref, you know, doing the whole thing. And it was just, it came off like a true championship big deal match. And the culmination of Sasha finally getting her one-on-one and this, that, and the other. And then afterwards, the way that they did the interview with her, they, you know, right outside the ring, and then Sasha's real emotions, and later on WWE Network, the interview with her on that. I mean, adding again that edge of realism, you know, because this is a big deal to Sasha. Sasha is a legit fan. She's legit, you know, has been in, you know, hey, this is a dream she's had since she was 10 years old. So her emotion and legit feelings about it are presented as connection with the character in the presentation. It wasn't this backstage thing where the girl playing Sasha is doing this. It was Sasha. And that really adds that whole another level to this.
I have a question about related to that for the Battleground pay-per-view. So Bayley was her partner, but is Bayley still an NXT talent, or did that make her?
That is a completely. I do believe somebody pointed out that at one point pointed out that this was a one-time thing.
Okay.
So giving the idea that she's still with NXT.
That's good, because I didn't want it to be. They just had this draft where you define, you know, these people are on the show and these are on this show, and then you just slip her in this way and now she's on Raw. I was hoping that would happen.
I think that's the way to go, because, you know, she still has a match to try to win the NXT title. If she were to be in the SmackDown draft and got or Raw draft, or if they said, well, now she's come and she's become Sasha's partner, so now she's part of whatever roster, that takes away from that NXT title match, because You know, she's not going to win. Why would she win? I mean, if she's going to be over here. But,
well, not necessarily.
True, because that's where you get into the kayfabe versus smart thing and so on and so forth. That would be a way they could swerve everybody and make a big surprise if she does win and whatever.
And Kevin Owens was still the NXT champion.
Yes, he was.
Became the U.S. champion, right?
Yes, he was. Yeah. Now, here's the deal. But still, it's good, because she still got this thing going on in NXT, and she's got to go back, and she's got to try to win her title back. And when she doesn't win the title back, as I'm guessing that she won't, you know, when they decide to bring her up, they do this bidding war, you know, between the McMahons and Daniel and why am I having trouble remembering Mick Foley's name? I am a horrible.
Well, he has four or five different.
That's true, but I just kept. I couldn't keep up. Come up with him. Anyway, so Mick and Daniel, whatever, you get into a bidding war over Bayley to bring her up, you know, to the either one of their brands, and that makes Bayley's ascension a big deal, rather than her just getting lost in the shuffle under, you know, Finn Balor coming up, you know. And I think that was the better way to do it. I mean. So I'm glad that she didn't get drafted in the draft. I really am, because, you know, I think their plan is that they're going to bring her in on her own in a special way, and I think that's way better for her.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I do wish that Bailey was drafted. I was kind of disappointed in that, but I guess I can see it. But I wish Nia Jax wasn't. I'm just not a fan.
I really haven't seen enough of her yet to have an opinion.
I like Nia, and I think that she has a lot of potential to be a big bruiser, badass gal, which I'm a big fan of, with Kong and all those kind of gals. They're definitely something that's needed in the women's division of WWE. But she wasn't ready to come up to the main roster.
No, anymore. And she doesn't have that.
Not even Tina Brooks did. You know.
She doesn't have that charm either, you know. She doesn't have that, like, Awesome Kong, you know. I mean, like, whether it's charm or charisma or whatever you want to say, like, you just wanted to watch her, you know. And I just don't think Nia Jax has that. I think she looks awkward. You know.
Well, like I said, she's just too green. She's way too green.
You know? Why are they doing that with all the Samoans?
Well, because they see money in Samoans because of the past, and they kind of push the pedal to the metal on it, and I don't know why. But
Rocky Maivia went over well.
I was going to say, and it's not like it isn't something new because they did it with Rocky back in the day. So,
speaking of Samoans, I liked that line when Roman Reigns said, "I'm Samoan, enough said," to Finn Balor.
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta think it referenced his recent rivalry with Samoa Joe a little bit, at least, and maybe...
Yeah, that's what I got from it, you know.
Maybe even was foreshadowing of some sort. But what I really... Because Samoa Joe's the only Samoan not related to the rest of the...
Rest of the Samoans.
So I hope he doesn't come in tied to Roman Reigns.
I want him to feud with Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
Talking about, you're the big badass Samoan. Well, I'm the real badass Samoan. So
right. Let's
settle this out. But by the way, before we leave Nia Jax, how great was it that we got squash matches?
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Jobbers, I hadn't seen that in years. I mean,
yes.
Years.
And they even interviewed that one jobber.
Yeah, it was great. That was so freaking great. You know, to talk to one of these skinny little nobodies that shouldn't be in a ring with somebody like Braun Strowman and ask him, "Why the hell are you doing this?" And it was great. The guy was entertaining as hell.
Yeah.
And then Strowman just destroyed him, and it was just beautiful. I loved it. So that's a good thing, and that's something they've been needing to do, because actually the last ones that they did that with was Ryback. Was the when he would come in and destroy these local guys or whatever, and sometimes two or three times. And then before that, I'm sure there must have been something in between there, but I remember Beth Phoenix was beating up local girls.
But this looks like something that's going to be across the board kind of thing to me.
Yeah, not just one.
Not just a gimmick for a wrestler.
Because they used it for both Nia and Strowman.
Now, they used to do the jobbers on Sunday Night Heat and stuff. You know, they'd have the one popular guy and then, well, I mean, AJ Styles was on Sunday Night Heat. Samoa Joe was. I mean, a ton of them were.
Daniel Bryan.
Yeah.
Or Bryan Danielson then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so that's good, and I liked the. Sometimes, you know, they got to the point where they would be so insular that they did things that, when you look at it, didn't make any sense. And I thought, afraid that they was going to do that with that situation where Heath basically invaded the ring and he was like saying, "I'm the best free agent," and all this and the other. And there's this jobber in the ring. So I was like thinking, oh, come on, let us know who is supposed to destroy the jobber. Well, then Rhino comes out and then, you know, gores Heath to a huge pop. And it was obvious that Rhino was supposed to wrestle that guy. So
I love that, as well as Mr. Irrelevant.
Yes.
Curtis Axel.
Yes.
I think that's the best way to, I don't know if get these guys over is the right term to use, but it's the best use of them given where they were prior to the draft.
Hulu cut all of that, but I did read about it. But yeah, Hulu didn't show any of that.
Who called
Curtis Axel Mr. Irrelevant? Did he just start calling himself that?
You know, I heard that somebody mentioned that, but I said it, but I don't remember who.
Because I hope it was him just, you know, being self-deprecating and...
Well, know, it's... Yeah, it's a football reference, definitely.
Yeah, oh, I think it is connected to something.
Well, it's a football reference because it's actually the football draft reference. It's the very last pick is called they deemed him as Mr. Right. Irrelevant.
Oh, and he was the last pick, and they went that as also war. And it has the double thing where his dad was called Mr. Perfect.
Right.
So.
That's works. Why I liked it so much.
Yeah,
I thought he was just going to do the opposite of what his dad did.
Right. So, anyway, back to Battleground. It was a really good pay-per-view, I think, up and down. I mean, I like all the results. And mostly good wrestling. I don't think there was anything... That's the thing. When's the last time we've actually had a truly bad match on a pay-per-view?
Oh, yeah. I haven't...
It just doesn't happen no more.
It's been a good year, that's for sure.
Yeah. But...
WrestleMania might have had some bad matches. Even though you were there, John, I know.
I don't know if there was a truly bad match in that. I can't remember. But anyway, what about KO and Zayn? I mean, many people are saying it's hands down match of the year so far. Somebody, I can't remember who, pointed out that it definitely was a better match than the match that Zayn had against Nakamura to them. And I have to agree, the match with Nakamura was fantastic. But this match was fantastic as well, but had the added emotion and storyline and character stuff and so on and so forth. With Nakamura, it was just a match.
Well, you know? And you have, I mean, Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are two different styles as well. I mean, you got the big man versus the little man. I mean, really. I mean, you know, you got the powerhouse. And whereas Nakamura and Zayn are kind of the same build and everything. Yeah. So I just think the moves are more destructive sometimes.
Yeah. But and there's this story that... you know, that's been built in WWE of them, built on the story from ROH and the Indies, and then the story of the match itself, just all culminated into this fantastic freaking match. My only criticism of it is that they got drafted to the same brand. They should have gotten drafted to separate brands, and this truly would have been their last match, you know, before, you know, maybe later on they, you know, get meat or whatever, but that would have made it all the more perfect, especially with that ending. You know, I think it would have been much better.
I wish that they didn't say it was like one last time and all that, because I mean, I do hope that they get a WrestleMania match one day.
Oh, there's no. See, I don't buy that. I mean, I buy that it was going to be last for that time, but I know they were going to go back to the well.
Well, Rock, yeah. Didn't they do that with Rock and Cena one last time? And
Yeah.
And then they did it again.
The next year, I mean.
I'd never bought for a second that we weren't going to have a KO Zayn match down the line, but it was just, this was it for now. And they were going to move on to separate stuff, separated by brands. And they're going to move on to other stuff anyway, but I mean, it would make more sense if they were on separate brands.
There should have been some kind of stipulation even that they were required to be drafted to separate brands or something.
And they kind of hinted at that, where they were saying that they needed to draft them to separate brands even at some point. So, yeah, I don't know what they fumbled the ball on that one, but that doesn't take anything away from that match and that ending and the whole works. I mean, that whole ending where, you know, in between the Huluva kicks and, you know, him, you know, lifting.
Oh, that was the best.
Oh, my God. That was just so freaking
Because you almost thought that he, like, the announcer said it a little too late, but you almost did think he was showing compassion a little bit. And then he picked Owens back up and gave him another kick.
Well, the way I look at it is that he did visually what earlier KO was doing verbally. Because
where he's like, stay down.
Yeah, he didn't want to do it. you know, it the beauty of this storyline is that it is guys who are best of friends who have turned enemies, but that doesn't mean that the original feelings that are not ever there. I mean, they're just angry with each other and mad at each other and hate each other, but they did love each other. So those reactions come off, again, we get to the reality thing again. You know, it just, it's real. It feels real because of the way that they present it based off a way that people really would.
Yeah.
And so KO is like, he's regretting this. He doesn't want to destroy Sami Zayn. He's thought better about himself. I tell you what, you want a good assessment of this match, go and watch Adam Blomfield's review from What Culture Wrestling. And he just sums it up so beautifully in the way that it worked and so on and so forth. And so I recommend everybody go listen to that because he does a great job of that. But so KO has his second thoughts and whatever, and then he's like, you know, begging him to stay down. Then, then Sammy, you know, has his thing and he's going to end this. But he has that moment there where he's like looking at him like, dude, you brought this on yourself. You
know? Yeah.
And then ended it. And it was just a beautiful thing.
It was. It was great.
What you think, Jonathan?
I didn't see Battleground. Sorry.
Oh man, you got to go.
You got to see it.
That match.
I mean, I know, obviously, I know the results, but I haven't seen the matches and everything.
Also, one other thing you need to check out on Battleground is Enzo Amore's
great
epic
promo.
Promo. I mean, probably the promo of his life. He'll probably never do it. I mean,
it was amazing.
It was great to watch. And so, how you doing? I said on Facebook the other day, it's going to be the new yes and what before too long.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just part of it.
Which is fine.
What is irritating to me? Yes isn't bad.
Yes isn't quite as bad as what.
Because
what
yes
is
just a celebration of whatever.
Yeah.
And usually doesn't interrupt what they're doing. What interrupts promos, yes, which I hate. What you're doing, that's really, truly, that's part of what Enzo and them are doing.
Yeah.
Especially when they do the list thing.
Oh,
you know?
The list thing is great. Yeah. And the tips he was given was just classic. And I have to mention, my favorite tip is don't ever look at anybody while eating a banana.
Eating a banana. Which, by the way, speaking of which, Adam Bonfield in his review, he opens up with him eating a banana and he says, don't look at me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. And you can see how it was because John just sat back.
And John Cena sold that entire promo. I mean,
yes, he
sat back.
He didn't say a word.
He was
just
enjoying it.
He
would bowed, he clapped. I mean, whatever the moment like presented, he did. And that's why John Cena is doing some great stuff because he's helping these other guys get to the level they need to. Because he's not going to be there much longer. I mean, a few years, maybe.
Well, I really enjoyed the interaction they had. I don't remember if it was the previous week's Raw or SmackDown. I think it was SmackDown. But when he was just kind of like, I don't get it. You just say a bunch of catchphrases and you ask how I'm doing or whatever. I forget exactly
right.
What he said.
Yeah, and it's Cass, his confusion. Like, yes.
And then Cass was just like, well, yeah, that's Enzo.
Right.
That's what he does.
Yeah, and that was kind of, somebody said that it was kind of passing the torch of John to the new, Thuganomics guys.
Right.
One thing, and I've mentioned this to John, we kind of had a talk about it the other day, but the one thing I couldn't stand about that promo was as soon as Enzo was over, Big Cass presented to the audience and said, wasn't that a great promo? Something like that. Maybe not the exact words, but he did use the word promo.
Yeah, he did.
And I do not like that. And you can acknowledge him, but he did not do it the right way.
And I thought better about it. I disagreed with you at first, and then I've come around to
I have no problem with him acknowledging
that.
Billy Gunn.
That was my thing, you know, is that I love the fact that he acknowledged it, but you're right, he could have acknowledged it in a much better way than he did, because that, again, is we just go right back to the presentation and the edge of realism, you know, and
like,
buying
it. It was just a promo. It was just something he had scripted.
Right. So, yeah, he should have said another term and put it in a different way. Or, you know, just add a boy and Lizzo or something, you know.
And they mentioned twice, I think it was during Battleground, JBL, yeah, it must have been during Battleground, because it was JBL mentioned twice of how big of a star Big Cass is going to be in his single career. And I just, I hate that they're even talking about that, because Big Cass is, and however he's made improvements, he's still greener than Roman Reigns, in my opinion.
Well, no, there's no way that Cass is ready for a singles push. No way. And more to the point, I know why they say that about Cass, because he's big. And,
he's a tall guy, by the way, Vince probably loves him.
As a promo guy, he's getting a lot better.
Oh, no, he has made vast improvements.
Much better. I mean, so, but him being around Zoe as long as he can is only going to be very good for this guy. It already has.
Sure.
And you know, him being around Zoe helps him, elevates him.
Well, he said that on the Stone Cold podcast.
Yes. But, you know, anybody who can't look past the fact of how tall and big that Zoe is, I mean, that Cass is, and overlooks this incredible, charismatic, freaking dynamo Zoe, and not realizing this guy is going to be big, 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 big.
Yeah.
And he already is. There already are, like, I think, the almost over guys on the freaking brand. I really do. Only one that you come as close as, you know, seeing himself or the New Day.
New Day. I mean, Zayn is over in his own way, you know, and Owens is over in his own way. But yeah, I mean, as far as getting the crowd into it, they are definitely the better, you know, the better.
No, I'm not taking anything away from some of the other guys who are getting good pops. I mean, we've got a lot of guys, which is something we've been needing, that the crowd are getting into. I mean, KO gets a pop every time, which I kind of don't like, because he's a horrible heel and he should be. but I get it. I know why they do. I pop for him, too.
It's the same thing you were talking about earlier, though.
Like, yeah.
People, the whole reality thing, people know he's performing, and so they applaud it. Instead of,
that's the part I hate, you know, and I get, you know, I get that he's over, I get whatever, but the thing that kills me is that then they boo him. So, I mean, he's doing the things right to get the boos, it's just that initial thing, and it doesn't help that he's got really good entrance music at the beginning, you know, there. So.
Oh, it's the best.
Actually, that's the new, I guess Jim Johnson is now doing mostly the WWE film stuff, so this group that does, I think it's a duo, I forget, CFO dollar sign.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I really like pretty much everything they're doing. I assume it is. I really like Finn Balor's entrance music.
Oh, God, I love Finn Balor's freaking music. I mean, legit, every single time that I listen to it, little hair stand out on my arms.
Yeah, the whole thing, like the part where the lights all come on and he does his little bow or whatever.
Yeah, it's great.
Which, by the way, folks, on a past podcast, Joe Crow did that theme on Kazoo.
Train whistle.
That's right. So you couldn't find a kazoo. You did a train whistle. Why, if somebody's got a kazoo and doesn't have a kazoo and has a train whistle, I don't know. Take that up with Joe Crow. But anyway, yes, we've had some great things. Oscar's theme is fantastic. KO's theme is obviously fantastic. I love Zane's 90s ska thing.
Oh, I love it. Bailey's. Bailey's is great.
Bailey's is great.
I like Cesaro's.
I like
Rollins.
Sasha. Sasha's got a good one, I think. You know. So, anyway. So we got that. I mean, So, I mean, some exciting stuff going on. We got, you know, storylines that are, you know, like that end of, you know, Charlotte and Sasha, it couldn't have been more perfect. I know there were some people like, and again, we're getting to this whole thing where, you know, everybody's like, so inside, or they think they know how the show should be run and the right way to do things. It's like you have Sasha win the title on Raw and on Super SummerSlam and this, that, and the other. Yes, because this is a new era and this is a big deal and it's the first new Raw. Why not? And the way they presented it and the way it came off, it was a big deal and there was millions of eyes on it. Rather than, let's face it, pay per view doesn't have as many people watching. And so you got Sasha stamped as the face, woman's face of this new era. And I think that couldn't have went off better.
While we were talking about Enzo, I meant to mention who else is on SmackDown. Did you see that? Carmella showed up.
Carmella.
I noticed it.
Yeah, so Carmella showed up. Actually, that whole women's spot right there on SmackDown, it felt a little weak, but I mean, it interviewed and it ended with Eva Marie.
Yes. But you know what? I'm going to defend Eva here.
Who didn't have a microphone.
She didn't need one. No. But here's the deal. I'm going to defend Eva here. They could do something with this gal because they have, just by virtue of the situation, real heat with this gal.
Yes.
And they can use that if they do it right. And her, I loved her entrance.
Her entrance music is great.
It was fantastic, and her look and the whole thing, you ride with that. The fact that she was getting booed more than anybody, bigger reaction than anybody on that whole show got. Mm-hmm. And then she's coming out, and, she's the biggest deal of all. Her, the song, the announcer, the great announcer guy.
Oh, yeah, he was
her
great.
So big. That is the way to do it, and you just have her as this horror, this heel that everybody hates. And
it's
works.
Almost like what they should be doing with Roman Reigns.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's built in heat. You can't pay.
But she
for
gets
that
more
kind.
Heat than him, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, but yeah, she does.
She gets lots of heat, and I love it. And that's a good thing, people. That's a good thing. Whatever you think of her relative talents. The fact is, she's getting a reaction,
yes.
And that's what it's all about.
That's
if you get the crowd to actually get off their freaking hands, sitting on their hands, and react to what's going on, that's half the battle right there, folks.
Yeah. The scary thing is when people don't have any reaction. If they're not booing or cheering, you're not
it's
doing
dead.
Your job.
There's nothing. Yeah.
At least Roman's
getting
they're
just
booze,
obviously there for, something to do on a Monday night and drink beer, and boo Roman Reigns,
Yeah. They love booing Roman
Cena
Reigns.
Sucks. That's the reason why, a lot of people have criticized Cena over the years, and the whole idea that, that he's had the split fans and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But there's never, ever been a moment where Cena didn't get a reaction.
That's true.
One way or the other, or both ways. He is the star of our era, this last, 10, 20, or 12 years, and there's a reason for it.
Yep.
It's not just because he got pushed, because, Cena points out to himself that, nobody believed in him at first, that they looked at other guys as being, much more, I'm sure Randy Orton was the guy they were going to go with.
Yeah.
Well,
and then
speaking of Randy Orton.
Speaking of Randy Orton, Jonathan says.
Well, I know. I think both of you are. Neither of you is a fan. I know at least one of you is not a fan of him, right?
Nah, I am not. But I will say that me or John, neither one of us really care for him. But I really, really liked him on Battleground.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I saw
him on SmackDown too. I think
that's what I was going to say.
He's gotten funny.
Yeah,
I think I missed it on SmackDown.
Where did this personality come from?
Right.
This new era brought it out of him somehow.
Now, Randy, I see, it's kind of a mixed thing with me and Randy. I think Randy's one of the best in-ring performers of his era. I really do. I mean, he's really, really good. He's smooth as hell. And if he's in the ring with a Christian or an Edge or guys like that, they put on absolute fantastic matches. Problem is, as you mentioned, Jonathan, he didn't have a personality, and he just never lit me on fire. And that's one of those deals where I'm like, well, man, there's something missing there for me. And there shouldn't be, because, I mean, I really love his talent. But, and he got a great look. And actually, he kind of, really the best time for him was when he was definitely doing the heel thing and was being a really dastardly heel and all that and the other. There he had a lot more character and so on and so forth. But that's a perfect example of a guy that they had a lot of faith in and saw dollar signs with. And they gave him a push. And he is talented, and he does have a great look, but they've mishandled him, and he didn't get to do what I heard he really would like to do. He really liked doing the stuff he did as the heel, and I think he's natural for that. But then all of a sudden, as you said, he comes back, and whammo blammo, he's like, you know, Randy Orton's got jokes, you know?
and he seemed like, he seemed like a natural face on SmackDown.
Completely different energy, and that's the thing, you know. Randy was a delight. He really was. And then, of course, you know, sparring with guys like Jericho and The Miz is, you know, going to be, you know, make it better. But yeah,
let's hope.
It just makes me wonder. Go ahead.
Let's hope Viperville doesn't become a thing, though.
No, it will, though. You know,
I know.
That's the only bad thing about it, you know. And when he did it the one time, that's fine. But then he did it the second time, and oh no. But anyway,
I just wonder, going into SummerSlam, who are, you know, is it gonna, who are people gonna be behind? Because Brock, I think we've talked about it on here. Brock Lesnar is, even though he has a manager and he behaves like a heel, people like him, so. Who are people going to be?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because, you know, Randy always has had a following. He always been very popular, and him coming back and being this, you know, energetic and entertaining is only going to increase that. There's a very good chance that Paul won't be with Brock because his contract is expired and they're renegotiating now, and we don't know if that will happen or not. So that will diminish Brock quite a bit as far as that side of it. But as far as in the ring, it just I think there's going to be – it's going to be split. It'll be split. And I – at this point, I'm predicting, fellas, that based off of all the stuff that's happened in the last, you know, few weeks, I think Randy's going over.
No, oh, I do too. Now, from even just from Battleground, because I don't – I think he got cut from SmackDown too on Hulu. But – But, yeah, just on Battleground, why not? Why wouldn't you push him? Because now, if he's got a character and stuff, I mean, because Brock is a part-timer. And especially with all the bad, you know, the UFC stuff now that has come out that he probably failed the drug screens all that.
He did. Two of them now.
So, but, and then you could go on the whole WWE announced that Brock part-timers are not held to the same wellness policy as full-timers, which I do not agree with at all.
I did take that as a complete double standard.
Yep, because that doesn't just mean Brock. That means Brock. Oh. That means Triple H. That means The Rock.
Yep. Undertaker.
And
this is nothing new, because there was a when that big stink came out several years ago, they point-blank asked Vince whether he was, and he says he's not under it, because he's not a regular performer, which he basically was saying, yes, I do use him.
Yes.
So, yeah, and then that also, at the same time, automatically implicated Triple H at the time. So anyway, nevertheless, we're running out of time, but that's not. But real quick, let's touch on this really important thing here. I hope that the issues with Brock does not make Vince and the powers that be low dollar and allow Paul Heyman to get away from them, because whether he's with Brock or not with Brock, he's the best freaking promo guy in the world. You could use this guy, pay him, and get him on your product, you know, and stay on your product, because he in my opinion, it's just as important as Brock himself. In a completely different way, as far as Brock is a big, you know, money draw and so on and so forth, but Paul, you know, he can get him on there talking, and it's going to be a good thing. So, and that's the thing I forgot about earlier when we was talking about the reality thing, and we'll end with this, because Paul Heyman is the master of that. There's nobody a bigger master of that question mark, you know, and that would be the best thing, is bring him in there and put him part of creative, because this guy is going to help whatever you're doing. But he recently was in in England with part of the whole, that show that, anyway, I draw a blank on the show, but you look it up, look England and wrestling, and they have their own little show over there, and they bring in talent, so on and so forth, and they do these live shows where he talks, and when he was talking, there was two things that came up that he played that whole veil of whatever the thing is, you know, with the reality versus non-reality. One was on the Randy Orton and Brock match, and then he kind of threw out there, you know, when he's talking about, well, you don't know what'll happen if ever. And then he said, you know, like, you know, Randy Orton with their RKO out of nowhere beating Brock. And then he quickly said, well, I'm not trying to tell you that's how the match is going to end or whatever. So he was kind of putting that question mark in there himself.
Yeah.
And then the big one that got all the news was he hinted in a way that maybe that Brock just decided to beat The Undertaker, that it wasn't booked.
I read something about that.
So, I mean, you know, and of course, you know, WWE has denied that and so on and so forth. But that's what Paul does. And that's where it comes from. That's where it first started back in ECW, so on and so forth. That question mark, that fine line of what's real, what's not real, and then making you question it. You know, just saying whatever, one little sentence or one little phrase, and that makes you say, well, I wonder. So let's hope that Paul comes back. Oh, go ahead, Jonathan.
Oh, well, no, finish your thought. You said you wanted to wrap things up, but I had a couple of questions before we do that, if we have time.
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to know, you both seem to have liked Raw a lot better than SmackDown. What particularly did you like better, or what did you not like about SmackDown? And my second question would be, we've talked a lot about what we all like about this new era. Is there anything that we don't like about it?
Well, I liked Raw just because it felt different. It didn't feel like the other, you know, it didn't feel like Raw. I went on Facebook and I said I hated the logo, but actually I think the logo worked when I saw it in the arena and on the screen and the way they, mm-hmm. like, had the machine punch and all that.
I agree.
I think it worked. I like the theme song way better than the SmackDown Live theme. And I don't like them calling it SmackDown Live, because that's what they used to call their live events. So I don't know what they're going to call them now, because it's not SmackDown Live.
I suspect that they'll just drop that probably after it's established that it's now live on Tuesdays. But yeah, I don't like that either. And I don't like the Raw logo at all. I think the W looks like an upside down M.
It does.
So I kept seeing Ram.
I get why they're doing SmackDown Live. I don't like it necessarily either.
Been live. So you're taking a 15, 20 year show and making it live. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. And it totally makes sense that they should, you know, let them, people know who may not be as on the edge of these things as we are, know that, hey, this is a live show now. So, yeah. Okay. As far as I'm concerned, I just, Raw just had a lot more energy. And like I said, there was two fantastic matches, and three freaking good matches, and four. I think the Roman Finn match was good. So great matches and big events. I mean, Chaucer winning the title, Finn, you know, being part of the Fatal Four Way, winning the Fatal Four Way, and then beating Roman in the end. The way that it presented the announcers. It was just a lot more exciting. SmackDown, I think, maybe was best summed up that what Richard said earlier was just a little Raw-ish, old Raw-ish.
Yeah, it just felt, it did, it felt old, you know, him, yeah, I just didn't care for it as much, even though it looks like we might be getting a heel Dolph Ziggler, so I'm all for that.
Yeah, totally for that, and we still got, you know, a better ring PvP guy, in Mauro Ranallo. But that's one thing else I want to say about both Battleground and Raw. It seems to me that that Cole has changed his style. And Cole was better at both of those than he has been in years.
I agree. And I love Corey Graves. I think he was toned down, too. He wasn't so heelish. Because I don't, I mean, I don't mind him being a heel, but I didn't like what he was doing on NXT. It was over the top. It was too much. But I think Corey Graves is a great
Corey's fantastic. Announcer. And I think that I saw a great deal of chemistry there between the two, so I have nothing but how it was there. We did see this other side of Cole back in the Beast in the East when he called that match, and it was very much straightforward, you know, PvP. So we know that Cole can do it, because, I mean, actually, I liked Cole and Taz on SmackDown back in the day.
Oh, they were, so
Cole has got the goods. It's just and Cole was getting the brunt of doing it the way Vince wanted him to do it. And that was what happened. But Cole is doing a little bit more his old style, old school calling. I think it works perfectly with Graves, and so that's another plus. Ranallo, he's got JBL, and we still, it's too early to say anything about. Why is that? I can't remember the third guy.
Who was that? Because I didn't see a name.
It was the NXT lawyer.
Was it David Otunga?
Oh, David Otunga. Yeah, David
Otunga. I thought that was him, but I was like, that don't sound like him.
Yeah, it's Otunga, and I like him. I just that he's new, and he's definitely playing the. And if they do, the one thing that I say, that I'm really more of a two-person group than a three-person announce team, but if you play it out where the PvP guy doesn't take sides and he's just calling the action, but then you have the angel and the devil on each shoulder who are not too over the top, but you know that the one guy's going to call out the heels on bad things, and you got the other guy that's going to apologize for the heels and point out where the faces may not be doing the right thing. And that can work if you have the right talents. So, and also, by the way, I took my shot at JBL, but he was very toned down as well. He may work better with Mauro.
He was cracking me up with Byron, though.
Oh, yeah. No, I do like JBL. I really do. But, you know, so anyway. Maggle! Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to ask Jonathan which one he preferred, since he asked us.
Sure. Well, I think Raw had the benefit of an extra hour, because I'm looking at the SmackDown results now, and there were only four matches. there was a lot of other stuff that happened, but just matches, there were only four. I don't know. I liked both of them. I am still curious what's going to happen with the women's title and all the other titles, because obviously they did what I said a few weeks ago I didn't want to happen, and announced that there's going to be a Raw title, the Universal Championship, and then the world title will remain on SmackDown. But we'll see how that plays out. But they haven't said anything about the women's title in particular. I think obviously the Intercontinental and U.S. title will just be brand specific.
Yeah.
But the reason I didn't want them to create a new title, aside from the fact that it's just like, oh, well, you had to make we have the championship on this show, so you had to just create one. You know, I think that kind of diminishes the value of that title.
But I also don't like the name of it.
I love it. Universal title works for me.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. It does sort of imply that now are there going to be wrestlers from other planets?
Well, you know, I guess in a way, because, you know, once you say that you could exist, but to me, it works this way, because I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the other things I do like about Raw is that without just outright saying it, it is an international show.
Yeah.
All of the participants in the Fatal Four Ways, there was only one American.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And you know, since the world title has been sort of, even though it says world, it's always been sort of an American title, Universal title kind of fits the international feel of all these people from all these different countries that are top talents, so on and so forth. And the guy who won is an Irishman. So I got that vibe from the show, whether that was on purpose or not, I can't say, but I mean, it sure seems like it. And so that part, that's another reason why I liked Raw in that respect. And one other thing, I liked that Stephanie and Mick appeared at the beginning and announced all the stuff that's going to happen, and then we never saw him again. Conversely, I could have used a little bit more of Daniel on SmackDown.
Yeah. So. That's well, just because you love Daniel Bryan.
Well, there is that.
Everybody does
that. I tell you, that guy is just freaking over, you know. And so it's good that he's back on television because he needs to be there. That's an asset that WWE has that they definitely needed to use. And him being a part of the Cruiserweight Classic and being the SmackDown guy is a good, excellent, fantastic choice. And with that, we have got to stop. We could go on all night, and we would if we could, but we can't, so we won't. So anyway, guys, always, Richard, run them down where we can see everything and find everything. And by the way, real quick, Jonathan, you can find it. Oh, yeah, I'll let Richard do it.
Well, let's see. You can always find us on Facebook. We've got a great group of guys over there, and just, you know, it's everybody.
Hashtag WCW, hashtag TBT.
Yeah.
That's Turnbuckle Thursdays.
And you, oh, Turnbuckle Thursdays. I hadn't heard
I came up with that today.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, yeah, you can find us Facebook.com/group/ESO Pro, and we are part of the ESO Network, so check out them, ESOnetwork.com, for all the list of dozens of podcasts that we are a part of. And Jonathan
at WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, which just turned 5 years old and is a fantastic site that focuses on wrestling and pop culture, and some great stuff there, including some great interviews with indie guys and reports and reviews and all that said together. And so without any further ado, we are checking out. We'll see you next time. Good night, everybody. Have peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.